Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist. I am the alchemy and alchemist, and I always have a co-host who is, she is the creative. And we come to you live every Thursday from 7 until 8, and we talk about business. We talk about some of your most pressing business needs, from finance to planning, investing. We even talk about your health. And we always have a guest, and I am in no position to introduce this guest this evening. And before our guest is introduced, I'll just say it's a very special guest, and I'll let my co-host handle that. Lori, let them know you're here.
So, hi, this is Lori Miller from LGC Interior Designs, and I'm so happy to be here another Thursday. So, even though we have a lineup of guests, we thought that it would be great if you knew what we actually do. So, tonight's special guest and surprise is our very own Ted Santos. So Ted has been my personal coach, my business coach, actually, not personally, for my business. He's helped me with some challenges, with growing, and it's we have a great friendship, and we have a great podcast, and I just thought that everybody else should reap the benefits that I've reaped. So I'm going to let Ted tell you a little bit about himself, and then I'm going to make him talk about his proprietary method of coaching. So Ted, there's the floor.
Okay. All right. So you all have heard me ask people millions of questions, and so you probably have a sense that I can talk a bit. So Lori may have to reel me in every once in a while. So
yeah,
I'll just say that I'm in the business of producing miracles. So companies, they hire me when they are looking to make some kind of breakthrough or quantum leap in the growth of their business. And I work with CEOs to actually develop disruptive strategies. Sometimes it could be disruptive technology, not always. And then I work with them to transform corporate culture so the culture of the organization is able to effectively execute. You know, oftentimes when you penetrate untapped markets or do things you haven't done, people kind of have a sense, well, we've never done that before. Why are we doing it? So transforming the culture so that doesn't become a normal sort of mindset. So that's what I do in a nutshell. I think that was less than 60 seconds, and I should have been able to say it all in an elevator ride.
All right, so let's go back, try it again. We'll do 30 seconds. So Ted, you work with Fortune 500 companies, and I know that you were working, you know, with some larger companies out here on Long Island, and you can't say this in a nutshell, but you have a proprietary method that you use, and it was the first time I ever heard the word disruptive. And all of a sudden, I'm hearing it everywhere. So can you tell us what this disruption is and how you use it?
Okay. So, you know, it's interesting. This is a true story. In 2006, I Googled, because, you know, I've had this methodology and I just didn't know what to call it. So I knew that there was some power in disruption. So in 2006, I literally Googled disruptive leadership and nothing came up. So I said, that's what I'm going to call it. And I wrote the first article to introduce it. It was published in the American Management Association. And I wrote it about, and my philosophy is this. One of the major jobs of a CEO in an organization is to intentionally create problems. You want to intentionally disrupt your organization. And people like Steve Jobs are really well known for that. There are lots of other people. You could say John F. Kennedy, when he declared a man to the moon, that was very disruptive. because disruptive initiatives generally don't have a blueprint. No one knows how we're going to do it. It becomes that breakthrough. So when I was looking at these patterns of my methodology and some personal incidents that were probably more the catalyst than anything else, it's interesting how unfortunate personal circumstances can be that major silver lining, and you don't see it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
So disruption, you know, it was disruptive leadership, leaders that need to be able to effectively disrupt the organization and then be able to navigate, support people through that disruption. People often, like you're saying, they don't want to hear disruption and problems and chaos and, you know,
mm-hmm.
breakdowns. They don't want to hear that. Everyone wants the happy ending, you know, the breakthrough. Let's get to the breakthrough. But they don't want to go through the breakdown to get to the breakthrough. So
right.
providing leaders with tools to not only navigate themselves, to navigate others in a company. So that's what it is.
So when you're creating disruption, how do you do that? Can you walk me through?
So, kind of in a joking way, you know, people, if they hire me, they may look at me as a consultant or an advisor, and they will think that I'm there to solve their problems, when in fact I'm actually there to create problems. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a funnier way, I'm a professional troublemaker, right? So,
okay.
If I walk you through it, the first thing is people have so many preconceived notions about what you can and cannot do, even what they can and can't do, what the industry can't do. And statistically speaking, most breakthroughs or disruptive technology comes outside the industry. So just look at Apple Computer again. They made these big computers that could cost you about $2,000. And
mm-hmm.
no one could ever see that they were going to make a product that would make the Walkman obsolete. So technically, the MP3 player existed. Sony technically should have been the one to move the Walkman to the, you know, MP3 player. They should have created that. Except someone outside the industry looks at it very differently. They don't have all the limits that people
mm-hmm.
in the industry have. So Apple was able to disrupt the market, and then that forced Sony to have to produce their own. So that's actually the first step, is to help people shed many of their limiting beliefs. And some of them are not even – people don't even see it as a limiting belief. They just believe that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like in Roger Bannister is the guy who first ran the mile in under 4 minutes. And during that time, he did that in 1956, people believed it was humanly impossible to run the mile in under 4 minutes. And he had to shed so many limiting beliefs, and that altered the way he worked out, his training. It could have altered his diet. And now the same mile is run in 3 minutes and 43 seconds. That's the world record.
Wow.
So that is right, exactly. So it's usually what people believe can and can't be done. They have limits on their people. My people are not capable. I'm not capable. You know, you all these sort of made up stories people just have in their head. You know, if man
right.
were meant to fly, he would have wings. You know, we have just time after time. So that's where it starts. Is helping people shed those limiting beliefs. And then we start to look at the future they want to create for their company. Like, what are these possibilities? What's this legacy, the initiative
mm-hmm.
you've always wanted to do? And you would say, hey, well, I'm never going to get to it. That's going to be too hard. It's going to, you know, you have all these reasons for not being able to get to it. And it makes it easier once you shed the limiting beliefs and you start to put structures
right.
in place to support it. So that's
hmm.
sort of a rough way of where it starts.
Very interesting. So what kind of resistance do you usually get at first? Have you ever been thrown out in the middle?
let me see if I can, the most interesting. I had a client once, and I remember we started in February of that year. And in December, you know, we were doing a review of, you know, his progress for the year. And this guy was really smart. Mm-hmm. He had a Wharton MBA in finance. He worked at, this is well before, that company that went out of business in the last recession, the big financial firm. He worked in mergers and acquisitions. Well before they went out of business. So anyway, we're at the end of the year doing a review, and he says to me, he said, man, I hired you in the beginning because you came recommended, and I assumed that you were just going to tell me a bunch of stuff like consultants, and you were going to confirm stuff I already knew, and I was willing to pay you for that. And he said, I had already written in my mind my speech for how I was going to fire you at the end of the year. He said, I already knew what I was going to say to you. You know, this has been great. You've confirmed stuff and blah, blah. He said, but you helped me see things that I didn't even know I didn't know. And he said, there's no way I'm firing you now. So he was close to firing me, and he also added, he said, some days I'm coming to meet you, and I have a check in my pocket. And this is a guy who's the CEO of a company with just under 200 people, offices around the country. And he said, I'm coming to meet you. I have a check, and I'm trying to figure out, why am I paying this guy? And he said, I come to you with a problem, and instead of you just solving it, you force me to think about things in a way I hadn't, and you start asking me these questions I never thought of. And he said, in the beginning, I was angry and frustrated. He said, now, today, I have a problem, so start asking me your questions. So yes, people have gotten frustrated with me. There's resistance, and so there is – there's a way that I have to be with people so that I am not frustrated with them when they get frustrated. You follow me on that?
Yes, because it's hard not to take it personally when someone's being angry with you and they're really angry with themselves because either A, they're stuck, or B, you're pushing them past their limits and it's uncomfortable.
Right, exactly. Yep, well said. So yes, never.
So how do you not?
I don't think I've been thrown out.
Right. Huh? So with that said, how do you not take it personally?
Well, that's the. So part of the methodology I have. Well, so there are times when I'm like, God, you know, let's move forward. Why are we getting stuck here? I don't say that after a session, and I know that I'm asking people to look at things in a way they just never have before. So maybe I've dealt with this since a child, so I've had some practice with this. But the other part is the methodology I have. It helps people do that for themselves. So, you know, if you're going to be a master in this world of breakdowns and chaos and intentionally creating problems, the most important thing you must master is yourself. So the tools that I impart to people really help them better manage themselves in the face of chaos. And that's important because as a CEO or a leader or an executive or a manager, you don't have to be a CEO. You may have an initiative that you want your people to execute. You know, they're going to achieve something they've never done. And they may get frustrated with you and say, hey, you know, why are you making us do this? This is unfair. They're going to come up with all these reasons why it doesn't make sense. And if you become upset with them, you're going to help sabotage it. Now you're all going to be in anger. So the tools that I impart is so that people don't get caught up in someone else's, let's say, drama, right? And usually people are making up things about something that never happened, and they have to walk through it. And I can give you an interesting story. I do these CEO roundtable events, and I hired some interns. Most of them were from NYU. And I hired this one guy. He was a journalism major, and he had a minor in Arabic studies. So I thought on his first day of work, I'd give him a project. And, man, he spent probably more than 5 minutes trying to convince me that you're making a mistake. I'm happy that you have confidence. And all I asked him to do was create a social media strategy for me. You know, this was 2010, I think, 2011 maybe. And I had not sat down and created it. So I thought, the way I looked at him is a journalism major, and in the world of journalism, social media is important. So this guy should have enough of an understanding of social media that he can create a social media strategy for me. It's not just about journalism. It's about, you know, what I put out in social media. And he said, "Hey man, I'm a journalism major. I don't do this. You need someone with a PR background. I just don't do that." And he kept back and forth, you know, "You're making a mistake. You could say out of his comfort zone, right? So I'm never going to be able to do this. I'm going to disappoint you. And I said, "I'll give you 90 minutes to work on it. I promise I'm here to support you, but just go out in 90 minutes. He came back in exactly 90 minutes with a smile on his face and said, "I can't believe I did it." He said, "But first you have to tell me if this works for you." And I looked at it, I said, "Great. Now this is your initiative. You're in charge of managing my social media presence." And it worked out well. But in addition to that, when he went to go interview for a job, he said he told me he went to interview at a PR firm, and he said he would have never done that before. He was only going to go to newspapers or other media outlets. And he actually told the interviewer the story about his first day with me. And it was so motivating that even the CEO of the company came in and shook his hand and said, "I heard your first day of work was like, you know, completely chaotic and you had to do this. I heard all about it." And the CEO was happy to meet him, and he didn't take the job. But that was one way to create a breakdown for someone, and it ended up being a breakthrough for him.
And that's impressive how many of us think like that, right? We're so stuck that this is what we have to do, that we don't see the other avenues. You know, and then when we're laid off or in an economy like this, all of a sudden we have to reinvent ourselves.
And you know, interesting, our first show was about transferable skills, and that's really what it's – everyone has transferable skills. And I think that's the other thing in creating breakthrough initiatives. It allows people to use, like, to mine this untapped talent, these transferable skills that are sitting there lying dormant in a company.
Right. Absolutely. So when you take a company of, 12,000 employees, right? Because I would imagine a Fortune 500 company needs that many.
They can have much more, but yes, 12,000, yep. And I do a lot of work with middle market companies, like that first CEO, you know, people with a couple of hundred. And I've worked with smaller businesses. So essentially I'm working with people, even though, you know, and dealing with strategy, some elements of finance, you know, I've run businesses as an executive, so I have a background. So it's not always a Fortune 500, except, please, what's
right.
your question about 12,000 employees?
Wait, I got that. No, I'm only kidding. So how do you take all 12,000 of those employees and bring them on board to what the changes are going to be?
Well, in that case, I wouldn't work alone, you know, if it's to work with the entire company. So, you know, I would work with the top 200 executives. So, you know, you start out with the top, let's say, 25 executives, and then you'll break them up into the rest into groups of about 50. So you're working with leaders that run divisions or major departments, and you work with them. And I'll have other people who work with me who've also been trained in the same or similar methodology as me.
Okay. Now, I know in counseling, right, in my field too, we do team building exercises and all kinds of fun things, and we do retreats. Is that something that you do as well?
Not really. One of the things that hurts people in building teams is that people have so many presuppositions about themselves and their team members. When you can help them take down those barriers, like those preconceived notions, you help them shed those, the team starts to come together by itself.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you can do things where they build teams, except you haven't altered the way they see themselves or one another. And I think it was a book called Risk Intelligence, and this guy in the book said the reason most people won't take risks is because they know too much. And then he said what they know too much about is self. They know too much about themselves. So people already know what their limits are. They already know too much about their own limitations. So they so if they know limits about themselves, they also preconceive limits about other people. And that's why you hear people in teams say, oh, he's just that way. That's just the way he is. And so then no one can get around all the limits they have for self and others.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to, you really, essentially I want to disrupt the way people see themselves and others so that it opens up how they're able to interact. And causing problems will do a great job in getting people to galvanize teams.
Mm-hmm.
They come together. If it's okay, I can share two personal stories that showed me up close and personal. So, yes, when I was 6 years old, right, and really that's where it starts. I was 6 years old. It was New Year's Eve. I'm the oldest at that time. There were only three children. And my mother took us, just the children, not my father, took us to her mother's for a New Year's Eve celebration. So she leads the party. It's, I don't know what time it was. I have no idea. 4 o'clock, 5 a.m. It was, you know, it was late. And she takes her brother and his wife home. And so she puts her three children in the front seat. And she figured, oh, I'm 15 minutes from home, you know, because she normally didn't keep us in the front seat. We sat in the back, but she didn't want to wake us up. So I wake up 100 meters from home. The car is wrapped around a tree. So my mother apparently fell asleep. She must have gotten too relaxed and said, oh, I'm almost home, and fell asleep, and a car crashes into a tree. So I look over at my brothers and sisters, and we're crying. We have blood. Everyone had to get stitches. And I look over at my mother, and the driver's seat is empty. So I'm just tall enough to look over the dashboard, and I watched my mother run home. And within no time, my father and his cousin come, take us out of the car, bring us to the hospital, and we all get stitched up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, that's what happened. Well, what I learned later is that my mother had two broken legs, and I literally watched her run. She didn't limp. She didn't crawl. She ran just like I had always – I'd seen my mother run plenty of times. She just ran home,
mm-hmm.
100 meters. I don't know what happened once she got to the house, you know, but she made it home, and my father came in no time. So at 6 years old, I was kind of obsessed with – how do you run with broken legs? So
mm-hmm.
at 11, I started physical exercise because I wanted to train and be an athlete that could break records and run with broken legs. And I did that. I'm 5 foot
mm-hmm.
six. I was dunking basketballs. I played positions in football that were for literally for the biggest guy on the team. And I broke records in track and in football. But I was always training with that in the back, like training to run with broken legs. Like, that became like an obsession in my life. And I started researching, you know, women lifting cars off of kids, just all these kinds of things. So,
wow.
So that was a major event. That major event shaped my life. The next event happened when I was 21, and now there are four children, and I receive a call that both my parents were dead. So now this running with broken legs is still there. So now I'm going to be in charge of the family. I declared that, not that anyone convinced me to do it. You know, it was, I'm the oldest. My life has prepared me for this. And I'm going to take over and make sure everyone is taken care of. So
mm-hmm.
the way I dealt with that from a leadership, so now I'm being a leader in chaos. I watched how, you know, our siblings came together in extreme conditions. You know, you just lost your parents out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I learned about delegating and coaching them up. There's so many lessons that I learned that were completely transferable to my professional life. So those are the two incidents that shaped me. And it took me years later before I understood how to give that to someone else to be able to implement
mm-hmm.
their own life.
Very, yeah. I mean, that's amazing. That's a lot. You were young, and to have that kind of fortitude, you know, or that thinking to even look up these things, the things that amaze you, just says so much for your strength, you know, because you know, you kind of look at those things and you're like, oh, okay, whatever. You know, I want pizza today.
right.
But
right.
You know, they put their heads in the sand and say, I didn't see that, nothing happened. You know, but you want to understand it. You want to move it. You want to get underneath and find out the nitty gritty. And I think, you know, or I know because I've experienced it, that's certainly what makes you pursue what you do and makes you good at what you do.
Thank
so,
you. Very much.
I don't know if any of our listeners have any questions, if they want to call in at this point and poke your brain a little. 516-387-1640. Please feel free to call in and ask Ted any questions you might want. If you're thinking of growing your business, now's the time to get some, should I say, free advice, you know, from an expert. Or we can, you know, we'll just continue on. So, back to you.
And even if it's not a business, I some years ago I did a webinar. And
mm-hmm.
all the people who called in, they called in because I think it was called, the show was called Leading Up, right? So that means
mm-hmm.
you have a boss, and all these people who called in, their boss, they reported directly to the CEO. So they were an executive reporting to the CEO. And
mm-hmm.
they all had questions and challenges around, how do I deal with my boss, the CEO? He's putting me in this situation. It could be if someone wants to discuss having a business, managing your employees, or if your boss is the CEO and you're having challenges about managing that relationship, or even with colleagues. So,
right.
Yeah, I'd be happy to have that conversation, and even more so with the pandemic. People are talking about a possible second wave of the virus coming. So, I think people are under a lot of stress, for lack of better words. And so when you talk about disruptive leadership, it's to give you the muscle or the power to deal with life in the face of chaos. But I'm working with people who are intentionally creating problems in their company, and that becomes easier, right? So I know I'm creating a strategy, it's a problem, people are going to be frustrated, and I've got to navigate them. Except what happens when the problems come from the outside and you didn't create them? The economy, competition, the pandemic, it could be anything, the building catches on fire, so many things that can happen. And so how you manage yourself really can have it can be a huge determining factor as to how the situation turns out.
Correct. Absolutely. So that's like you said, our first podcast that we did was, transforming yourself. And, how do you doing the transferable skills? So how do you know when it's time to take that leap of faith, or when it's time to make that change?
So the straight and short answer is when you say so.
Well, that's interesting.
That's it. The tools that I have can even be transferred to someone's personal life. So, you could say, if we look at it on a personal side, someone says, well, how do I know when I love this person? Well, you love them when you say so. How do I know the time is right to do this? Well, when you say so. There are businesses that, grew out of horrible economies, whether it was 1930 and the Depression, or 1980, and we had we had inflation. So and I think Airbnb came out of our last recession. So there are businesses that come out of that actually start in bad times, and you could say, well, the economy's not right, so I can't do it. Well, as long as you'll always be right, as long as you believe that.
Yes, but I'm also thinking look, we weren't prepared for COVID, and nobody said to themselves, the time is right. And we had to go forth and conquer.
Yet you and I started a podcast right in the middle of it.
Exactly. I mean, we didn't say, the timing is right. We just kind of started, and then it was like, oh, look, we got lucky.
Well, we had been talking about it and planning it, but, it was like, we're going to do it now. Let's do it. We'll put a date on it. So the time it started when we said so. We could have said, well, let's wait until the virus is over.
We could have. But we were even start right, I guess. But people need to make changes before they're ready sometimes.
That's why the time to make changes is always when you say so. I mean, you could say it's now, right? The best time is now. I had a CEO of a Fortune 500 as a guest at one of my events. And that CEO said, the time you start change or transforming the organization is when you're successful. Most people wait until things are getting bad. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So here's the question. What is a sign of failure?
When you give up?
Success.
Success is failure?
No. The question was, when is there a sign of failure? And I'm saying success is a sign of failure.
How is that possible?
You see, when you're successful, you know you're good, and it breeds complacency. And once you become complacent, I'm doing so well, I'm successful, I'm the best, that is when failure comes right in. It may take you a while to see the failure, but that's when it starts. So this CEO, this is something I've said for a long time. So it was interesting to have this CEO come in and say one of the rough lessons they learned was that they were trying to ride out success, and they just kept riding it because they were good times. And then the economy
mm-hmm.
changed, the consumer demands changed, and they were not prepared. Now it was like they were caught with their pants down because they had been so successful that their success basically killed them. It killed off any possibility for change because they already had proof that what we're doing is good and it's working. So why should we do anything to change? And what that CEO learned was when you're successful, that's when you actually start your transformation. You don't wait for things to start to go on a decline because it's too late. But when it starts on a decline, that means it happened some time back. The failure started, and you're now being reactionary.
Okay. Well, surprise, we have a caller in, 870. Caller, did you want to announce yourself, and do you have a question? If you're listening in, that's fine.
870. You're live and on the air with the Creative Alchemist. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hey, what's going on?
Man? I'm doing all right. I just caught on to what's going on.
All right. So give your name and let everyone know where you're calling from.
Oh, this good old Kendrick. Good old Arkansas, man.
All right. Thanks for calling, Kendrick. So Lori is interviewing me. So she was asking you if you had a question or something you wanted to add.
Well, basically, I did call on just after you guys were talking, so maybe you can kind of get me back up to speed.
Okay. So we're talking about what I do as a profession, and it's helping people or entire organizations create breakthroughs to actually be able to produce a result they didn't know how to produce. And essentially I do that by helping people intentionally create problems. So let's see, if you took it on a personal level, if someone was unhealthy, you know what, this is a good one. So sometimes, you know, people are just way overweight, they're obese, and their whole life is about, oh my God, I have to lose this weight. This is horrible. Well, that's how most people approach the whole diet thing. I have to lose weight. I don't want to be like this. And so most people focus on all the things they don't want. I don't want to be overweight. I don't want to be healthy. I don't want to be undesirable. I want someone to like, you know, all I want someone to like me, all this stuff. What is often the breakthrough is to have some kind of commitment to creating a body that has extraordinary health. So That would be a breakthrough. It would also be a problem if they've never done it before. So by someone saying, what's happening now is I'm overweight, and the problem I'm going to create for myself is I'm going to have extraordinary health. To have extraordinary health, I have to look at my diet. I have to look at the way I sleep, the way I think, the way I see myself, which is like the most critical. And what are my exercise routines, right? So those are just four things: my diet, my sleep, my mindset, and how I see myself, and exercise. And if you just look at those four things and say, what are the things I have to do in each category to have extraordinary health? And that person works on that. And the whole commitment is to have extraordinary health. And they work out, and they change their diet, and they make sure they get sufficient sleep. But the biggest thing is, when they look in the mirror, how do they see themselves? If they keep saying things like, well, I'll never be fit, I'll never be healthy, that's not for me, those are those gym rats, or they have like negative things to say about people who work out, it will be hard for them to see themselves. So that mindset has to transform. And so this is where I think a lot of people miss dieting. People think, well, knowledge is power, and you can give someone the best diet, except if they don't deal with the exercise routine and the proper, you know, foods you put in your body, workout, and more importantly, how they see themselves, the best diet won't help you. So if you take that same kind of method and put it into a company, well, you can have a company do extraordinary things if people transform themselves. But they have to be focused on the outcomes, not the things they do not want.
Okay.
So you up to speed, Kendrick?
Oh, yes. Most definitely not.
Okay. Sorry.
I'm
sorry.
I find myself focusing mostly on the outcome of a combination of things for later on, mostly than I am in the here and the now. So that's kind of been...
You mostly focus on the here and now? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, no, sir. I was saying I'm mostly focused on later on in the long term than I am here in the current time. That's my mindset, you know, for the longest. What this result going to lead me 15, 20 years down the road, you know what I mean?
So what would be a breakthrough for you, Kendrick?
Breakthrough for me would be, you know.
And a breakthrough a breakthrough is something you like, a result you'd like to produce, except you don't know how to do it with your existing resources, you know, time, money, environment, whatever your resources are. And a breakthrough could be anything. It could be in your personal life. It could be your professional life. A breakthrough would be anything.
Well, for me personally, mine was, you know, was not finishing college and nothing like that, but was one of my biggest achievements, Ted. I was in the process of, you know, preserving food preservation, you know, for the long term. So,
So a breakthrough is something you don't know how to do. It's not something you're already working on.
Okay,
it's not about improvement. A breakthrough is something you'd like to achieve, except you don't know how to do it with your existing resources.
Okay, I see what you're saying there. Something like becoming a CEO or something like that. That's something you would be talking about.
It's got to be something that you can commit to, right? And you will put in the work and the planning and the strategy to ensure it happens, right? So if I were to say I want to fly to the moon next week, I could say that. That would be a pipe dream, right? Because I haven't done things to prepare me for it, right?
True.
So I'm asking, what would be a breakthrough for you?
Well, another one was, you know, like you said, family for me. Yes, sir. That'd probably be another, you know, I guess another educated example of such a thing, Ted.
What do you mean, family? For you? I'm unclear.
As far as building from the ground up, coming from nothing, building yourself up, like you say, trying to have what the Joneses or somebody else had, you know what I'm saying? Like you saying, this man come from nothing, trying to build yourself up. That's basically what I was trying to say. Maybe I'm still a little confused. Maybe you can still hear me.
Okay.
On that topic.
So is there something you'd like to accomplish in your life and you're not sure how to do it?
Well, like you say, I believe that stands for a lot of men out here who don't have kids or have a family or a team.
No. Only for you. Not
me personally.
Doesn't
yes.
matter what the rest of the world. You personally, is there something you'd like to accomplish and you're not sure
yes,
how
sir.
To do it?
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. If it ain't like you're saying, if it's in conjunction to either some more life skills or, you know what I'm saying? Or either picking up some more trades, I'd be willing to do it.
I understand.
That's all right. You were going to say something, Lori?
No, I'm saying I'm not sure I understand or if, you know, where you're at is just not clear, but it's okay. Yeah, I mean, it's great if you want to pick up some life skills and, you know, kind of do something a little different. What do you do now?
Oh, I am, you know, a self-employed cook. I do a lot of craftsman type of things, and I'm into old school soap craftings and things of that nature. Plus, I'm a small town neighborhood vegetable farmer, and during the summertime, I grow fruits and vegetables here and there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as, you know, as much as my capability.
Okay.
Right. Where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm out here in Proctor, Arkansas, a little rural town outside the city limits.
In Arkansas.
Okay.
That's pretty cool. Well, thank you.
Okay. Oh, ain't no problem.
It's always great to have our listeners all over, and we didn't know we reached that far, so that's pretty cool.
Oh, yes. I'm out here with a gumbo dirty.
Oh. Good to know. We'll have to stay in touch if we ever come visit.
Oh, cool.
So you've reinvented...
I look forward to it.
You sound like you reinvented yourself a few times. Right? A lot of talent?
Well, I wouldn't call it talent. A lot of things that I picked up on, you know, just from my elders coming up. And, you know, the little bit that they showed me when I was coming up as a little child, it took a part of me. It became second nature to me.
Right.
Everything from the culinary to the pastries to the quilting, making jellies, any of those type of things. Come again?
Right. Yep, to the agriculture and everything. Well, we're going to put you on hold. We have another caller coming in.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Yeah, so we thank you for calling in.
No problem.
Very much. And if you want to stay on the line, you know, feel free.
Okay.
You don't have to hang up. And we're going to let another caller in. 406?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Do you want to say something, or are you listening in? All right, we've got 406 listening in.
They may be on mute. They may have area code 406. You're live and on the air with the Creative Alchemist. What's your name and where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Lakeside, California.
Hello, and what's your name, Lakeside?
My name is June.
June, thanks for calling, June. How are you today?
Good. I have a question. So let's see if you have an answer for me, okay? So I have a tenant. Okay, I don't know if you know this is California. So I have a tenant who I cannot get out of the space. They have mold in their apartment. And, you know, the California law says that they could stay no matter what. So we've offered them a place to stay for the 2 days of the mold remediation, and they said that they want to stay at like a Westgate hotel, not like a Motel 6. So they're giving us a standard on what they think that their needs are, and I don't really know how to handle it because I just want to just let them stay there and have no water or electricity for the 3 days it takes to do this.
So this is there's some conflict resolution and negotiation, it sounds, correct?
Yeah. So I'm more conflictual than resolution oriented. And, you know, I mean, like, the person who, the tenant is like, you know, they're just a cockroach person. They're, you know, they have a lot of people coming and going that are kind of unscrupulous. I know that they're doing drugs in the location, and I don't want to put them in a hotel on my ticket because I'm afraid that they're going to destroy the room and then I'm ultimately responsible for it. But because they're so resistant and I'm more of a regulator, like I'd rather just whack them out than talk to them. I was hoping that maybe you can give some instruction.
So,
well, I'm not sure.
It's almost like you'd rather destroy the place to get them out of there, right?
I would rather, yes. I'd rather just, like, leave one lost wall standing and remodel the entire location, yeah. I mean, they're really difficult. Like, I don't like being told I'm not going to go stay at that motel. I need a bed and breakfast. Like, who does that?
Nobody.
Right, right.
So
what
in the corporate
the
culture, throw them out.
So legally, there are some legal constraints, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And by law, tell me again, what does the law say you have to do?
So the law says that the tenant can, the landlord, myself, cannot put the tenant out for things like this. The tenant has the choice to stay in place during the work, or you have to provide them the level of accommodations that they are already living in. Well, they're living in a tenement with mold. So does that mean that I can put them in another tenement with mold?
So, okay. So either they stay there while the work is being done and the work is going to take 3 days to complete it?
It's going to take 3 days. And we've just learned that they have bed bugs as well. So, that's another have to work around. Like, so I think the place is going to have to be fumigated before they can even go in and start doing the work.
Right, because no one will want to go in there with bed bugs, right? So is it confirmed they have bed bugs?
Well, I mean, the guy told us, well, I got bed bugs. So I guess, is that a confirmation? I mean, I don't know how to, like, confirm it. Do I go in with a microscope? I mean, I don't know.
No, okay. No, I thought
a
there was
sheet.
Some other confirmation, right?
Okay. Yeah, no, he told me that.
Right, this is out of his mouth. Okay. So, and what did you say to him when he said he had bed bugs and dealing with the mold? What did you say?
I said pets were not allowed.
All right, so we have 5 minutes left. Thanks for calling in.
You're a real estate guy, right, Ted? That's why I thought I would call in. Because I understand that you do real estate and that you do it in New York, which is a much more aggressive market than California. So well, just in the kindest way possible, how do I move forward with this guy?
So if you've had, listen, first you've got to tell him if he has bed bugs, it has to be fumigated, right? You cannot address the mold. No one's going to come in and do the work. That's step one. How long does that take? Is that like a 24-hour period to fumigate it?
Have you
checked into
that?
Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he has to be out of it. And I would assume the bed bugs are his problem. I don't know what the lease says, but that would seem like that's something he's
something that he
right.
brought.
So
yes.
you're right, exactly. So you're not liable. That's not on your dime. Except I assume you would pay for the fumigation or he has to do it.
Right. We'll be paying for the fumigation. We gave him this is all coming because we gave this person 60 days notice.
Okay.
And we're just
right.
trying
so,
to do some in the process of his 60 days, and he's very upset about it.
All right. So what?
Yeah,
you know,
I would think
unless he wants to stay there. Go ahead, Lori.
No, I was going to say I would think you'd have to consult a real estate attorney in the state of California.
Okay.
I mean, that
all
would
right.
be my
yeah,
suggestion.
Yeah.
Well,
I guess
your part, for your part, there's a whole frustration. So, like, so here's what I hear you saying. You have a tenant, right? The way their place looks sounds like it's not the kind of place you would personally want to live in. They said that they have bed bugs and there's mold, and so there's a 12 to 24 hour process to get the bed bugs out, and then there's a 3-day process to get the mold out. Like, that's what.
Correct.
So
yeah.
whether you like their place or not is really irrelevant. Like, you'll drive yourself crazy doing an analysis and making up all the stories about what kind of person they are. You really just need to deal with the facts. And an attorney would definitely be the right person, but even speaking to an attorney, you'll drive yourself crazy with all your assessment of them and judgment that don't support you in the outcomes you're seeking.
Oh, okay. So have no attachment to the outcome?
No,
yep.
There are outcomes that you have to make happen, right? There is the bed
right.
bugs that need to disappear, and there's the mold that needs to disappear. So that's what you're looking to accomplish, right? So but all the judgments and assessments about the tenant personally will just drive you crazy, and you'll be frustrated over something. In most cases, that doesn't even exist. It's just your assessment of them, which is irrelevant.
Okay, so just stick with the facts with them and get an attorney to draw everything up and just not go over there myself?
Exactly. Yep.
Okay.
You can – listen – if you're going to go there, don't judge the guy. That's just not your – that's not in your contract. It's not in your lease.
Right. Okay, I'll work on that. That will be some good, deep soul work. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Well, everyone,
all right.
Thank you. Thank you, 406, for calling in. Thank
you're
you, everyone.
Thank you,
we look forward to next week, Thursday night, another special guest. Ted, thank you so much for sharing with everybody what you do.
No, my pleasure. And caller, that thank you for dropping that right in my lap like that. So thank you for that. My intent is that you did get some value out of that. You're really going to have to manage yourself. It's not about the tenant at this point.
Right. Okay.
Thank you, Ted.
Thank
well
you. No,
said, everyone. Have a great night.
Take care, everyone. Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.